Welcome to Behind the Screens, a podcast series where Danske Commodities in-house experts give you an inside look into the world of energy trading. My name is Jens Østergaard and I'm your host. In this episode, we're going to zoom out a bit and look at the power value chain of the past, the present and the future. In other words, what did the power landscape look like 40 years ago? What does it look like today? And what will happen in the coming years? To give us the complete overview, I have invited our head of Central and West European power markets, Peter Fritzsche.
Being part of building up the one of the first trading organizations in Denmark, but to me it was completely new. It was completely new to everyone.
And our head of commercial business development, Andreas Schwarz.
And you need to be even better at your analytics tomorrow than you are today in order to succeed. And that I think is very interesting, being a very data-driven person by myself.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Peter Fritzsche, let's start by going back in time, back to the 70s and the 80s. What did the power value chain look like back then?
Obviously, it was quite different than what we're seeing today. It was back in the monopoly days, where the market was only dominated by incumbent utilities who were often financed by the state or by consumers, as in Denmark. Basically, they developed the supply after whatever they thought was necessary. They didn't really look at the technologies in the same cost-effective way that is being done now, and they didn't really have any real big agenda about renewables or anything like that.
So if you could paint me a picture, if I flipped the switch in my house and the light turned on, where did that energy come from?
Back in that days, it was all conventional power plants, which was dominated very much by coal, gas and oil power plants. So for many years, the Danish power plants, they were the most efficient in the world when it comes to the overall efficiency of their power plants. In Germany, for instance, most of the steam, the hot water was just let out and not used to any purpose. So you had low efficiencies of your coal power plants. Where in Denmark, we always had the steam pumped into the district heating systems and thereby heating the houses. But when you turned on your electricity at home, also you paid a monopoly cost of the power. So and back in the days, they could actually calculate and determine the price exactly themselves, what they wanted and what they saw fit. And you know, in economic theory, that sometimes means that there's maybe a little bit of oversupply and a lot of dead meat you could actually cut away to make power prices cheaper. And that's what's also what we saw. And also one of the reasoning why they started to grant third-party access to the market and stuff like that.
Yes,
and maybe also an important thing from today and from how the power market was yesterday, so to say, is that you could not choose as a free customer who you want to get your power from. An unbundling of these big monopolies was also, I think, it's a very positive development we have seen.
Yeah, so going back to the 90s or so, we start to see a liberalization of the energy markets. What was it that happened back then?
In Europe, I was initiated actually by the Norwegians, where they had the first spot exchange on an hourly basis for power tomorrow back in the early 90s. And then we had a wish from the EU to unbundle, as Andreas just said, and also to grant third-party access. So there was a law passed, which then by force opened up the grids for other players in the market than the usual suspects, so to speak. The monopoly, one of them in Denmark, was not connected electrically. So we had Elsam on the west side and Elkraft on the east side. And they all of a sudden had to open up trading departments where they had none. So that's where also I got my first job and being part of building up the one of the first trading organizations in Denmark. But to me, it was completely new. It was completely new to everyone and a lot of conflict with all the engineers who worked at those spots, I remember.
Who were the new parties that were allowed access to the grid?
It was actually a good example is just the Danish companies. We all of a sudden saw a big opportunity to sell more power to Germany, and all of a sudden we saw other players also coming, like DC actually, where actually after you had this opening stage of liberalization, you also opened up for other people being able to buy that capacity. And that's obviously where DC originates from. That's from actually just buying power in Denmark, buying the right to transport it and selling it in Germany. Immediately after that, we saw all the Americans coming in. We had I think at one point 10 to 15 big American utilities coming into the market, spearheaded by a very famous company called Enron.
We know that one.
Everyone knows that one. So they came in and they created a marketplace themselves. They had they were pioneers when it comes to online trading. So they had a software called Enron Online, where every participant could go and trade with Enron on both sides on more or less anything. So, and that was a big change for the market, because there was no exchange in the forward exchange at all in Europe. The Scandinavians, they built one on the top of their spot price model. They very quickly found out the need to hedge and to control risk. So they invented a forward exchange as a way you trade for longer dated periods than just a day ahead. But Europe didn't really have that. But Enron facilitated it with their own system. And unfortunately, they... they're not here today.
That's a story for another.
From a trading perspective, I know I'm not saying that all the other stuff that they did is correct, but from a trader's perspective, they were very, very, they were like door openers for the rest.
Yeah. When are we talking right now? Is that about the year 2000 or when are we?
That was around the year 2000.
So how, maybe Andreas Schwarz, how did the energy value chain look like at that point?
At that point, you had this increasing awareness of renewable energy and also climate attention. So from being a very centralized produced generation, you start to have more decentralized production of the power from these renewable resources, especially wind. But of course, this was a new technology, so to say. So the business case as such was not profitable, and hence a lot of these investors got a subsidy from the government, because the government wants to support this development.
But how, if we just say it as clear as we can, how is the liberalization of the markets connected to the rise of renewables?
As you have more renewables, which is per se more weather dependent, you need to have more flexibility in your system to manage that, but also to trade the power and hedge it in the market. So the development of the wholesale market, and especially the short-term tradable markets like the intraday market, right? Because where you actually trade power after you have submitted your production plan. Remember that it's easier to submit a production plan, an expected production plan for the day ahead. If you have a conventional asset, you can just start your production of the power and close it or stop it when you don't need it any longer. But with a wind park or a solar asset, you cannot control the power output you get. And hence you have this need for an intraday market where you actually trade out the balancing or the residual of your expected production of these assets.
But on top of that, you can add that it actually helped opening up the market quite a lot, because as we see in early market stages, illiquid market stages is dominated by few players. And obviously in the monopoly times, there were only a few players. And actually new production capacity it was added every year to the system from wind and then also from solar. So in the end, there was a lot of competition about selling power all of a sudden, which was also, of course, facilitating opening up activities and made the price drop on for several reasons also. It also made the utilities have to really rethink what their edge in the market is, because they were also often, they couldn't really close down the power plants because they were still needed for grid services and grid purposes. So there was a lot of overcapacity and it's just a lot of push on the price. And obviously the utilities started losing money, so they needed to focus on hedging again, hence you see more trading.
So now we moved from a sort of a very simple setup with a power plant producing power for a certain area to a bit of a more free, a more open, but also a bit more complex energy system. If could you give me an sort of an overview of the power value chain as we see it today in the present? So the power is produced, and then what happens?
That's the fun part about especially power, because it's produced and consumed in exactly the same millisecond, you can say, basically, because it's non-storable. So how do we get it from the from the production to the consumption? And there we have, of course, like the physical piece of it, which comes with the TSOs and the DSOs, who make sure that that the grid is strong and the grid works, and there actually is always a power whenever you turn on your light switch at home. But then on top of that, you have the commercial side of it. And basically, that's where we have the trading houses coming in. We have the retail companies coming in, and in the banks and the funds coming in, making it a market where you can, which is easy accessible and hence more competitive, and then much more efficient for the consumer, actually.
And to add, I would also say that the power value chain today is very much fragmented, with a lot of different players being specialized within the different areas of the value chain.
Which players are that?
It could be the producing players, the typical it is still the utilities, but it could also be new investors like pension companies that invest in these renewable assets. So new investors are present now in the value chain at the production. It is new trading companies because it's becoming easier to actually create a trading company and to trade in these free markets. On the consumption side, you also see that larger corporates are actually engaging more and more in this value chain, like Google. So instead of just buying the power from the retailer, they buy it directly from the renewable assets.
So again, to zoom out a little bit, we had the liberalization in the 90s, the rise of renewables maybe in 2000 to 2010 and still ongoing, of course. And now we're in 2020. What is happening right now? What are the current mega trends that are going to transform the markets going forward?
We still see this mega trend of the decarbonization. You could say it's, which is also driven the renewable mega trend as well. Now we are only talking about power, but a new trend within this decarbonization is actually sector coupling. So how can you use the excess power of these renewable assets into transport sector, for example, electrical vehicles, but also for heating? So electrify your, so to say, heating devices from using gas and oil to use electricity. So you try to make, so to say, the whole energy system more efficient and green. With all the renewable installations, you have this major decentralization. And so we started from the centralized production to more decentralized and distributed energy resources. So it comes to the next factor, which is the digitalization, because you need to have some systems that enable this, so to say, very fragmented, decentralized production. So you need to have some intelligent systems. It could be, for example, virtual power plants that are aggregating all these distributed renewable generation into one big pool and sell it out in the market. So you also have this, so to say, activation of the consumers. So a lot of talking about prosumers, saying that consumers can actually also offer their flexibility to the market instead of just being passive consumers. You and I can actually offer our flexibility to the system in order to manage all that renewable power generation. And as Peter's mentioned, we need to be in balance every time. So balancing requirements is a huge challenge going forward with this system, with more reliance on renewable, unpredictable power generation. So you need to activate as well the consumers, which have been very passive, to make them more flexible.
How can you do that? How can you activate the consumers?
A lot of talking about demand response. And so you give the incentive for you and I to actually plan our power consumption based on what helped the system, but also make economic sense for you. meaning that would it be smarter for you to use to charge your EV during the nights where the consumption is generally low and you have a lot of wind generation?
Which technologies are going to sort of be important for the way we produce and consume power in the coming years?
So flexibility technologies will be needed much more going forward. And that would be, for example, the storage solutions, but also these, as I mentioned, demand response from the consumers. And then you could talk about converting power to something else. So power to X, it could be power to transport, as we mentioned, power to heating, or power to gas, so to say. And to gas, it could be hydrogen, for example. A lot of people are talking or investigating in what's called green hydrogen, where you actually convert excess power into hydrogen, and you can use the big infrastructure, a gas pipeline infrastructure in Europe to store the power on a large scale. Because the challenge with the batteries, the lithium batteries as today, is that they are too small and can only store power up to a certain given time. So it's not a, so to say, sustainable solution.
I also think maybe you can add to that maybe the increased cable connections between European countries. I think it's very important to have a good look at that. One of the biggest obstacles the green energy has had throughout the last years is actually getting the transportation fixed from individual countries, but also from within individual countries, because the expansion of the renewables has been so fast that the grids have simply not been scaled correctly to it. And I think that will, there's a lot of projects going on, sea cables and also cables in Denmark, cables in Germany, that will solve all these problems, and that will help a lot to actually use the green energy more efficient than we are doing today. There's still one ongoing problem, though, is that, however, so you have to make sure there's always power, also at night and at non-windy days throughout Europe. And that's where the different technologies and the cables can come into play.
So last question, maybe a bit more of a personal question. What, when you look at all of this that's happening in the energy sector, in the energy markets right now, what are you most excited about of all of these mega trends?
From a market perspective, from a trading perspective, it's not really a mega trend like the ones we just talked about, but I'm very excited about the overall market convergence which is happening. We see markets becoming more and more efficient in the power, but also in the gas market. So we are seeing a big increase in liberalized gas markets. And why is that interesting? That's interesting because then we have a completely new component in the power space which we have to take into consideration. And that will be giving us opportunities going forward. So those kind of things, I of course think is very interesting.
Yeah. For me, it's like from a financial background, it is the market is becoming much more efficient and becoming more similar to equity and bond trading. Hence, it becomes more data driven and fundamental driven. And that at the same time, the market is becoming much more complex and more. You have more data points, and you need to be even better at your analytics tomorrow than you are today in order to succeed. And that I think is very interesting. Being a very data driven person by myself, so if you want to have an edge, you need to be the best in the market, so to say. To interpret this, the different data points and take fast decisions in the market.
Well said.
Peter Fritsche and Andreas Schwarz, thank you very much for joining me here today. You have been listening to Behind the Screens, a podcast series created by the energy trading house Danske Commodities. With this series, we want to give you an inside look into the world of energy trading and the latest market trends. Be sure to catch the next episode of Behind the Screens to learn more about how the energy trading business works.